So we created a series called Fixer Upper, and in the midst of it, Chip and Joanna Gaines decided they're going to stop doing the show. So I guess that means if you want a show canceled that you love, just we'll make a sermon series around it, and there you go. So, so when we talk about this Fixer Upper, we've been going through an acrostic, you know, F, I, X, and like each thing is a different topic. Where we've been, we talked about firm foundation, we talked about investing, we've talked about expectations, we've talked about each other, and we've talked about rest. Did anybody take my message to heart last week and take a nap? I got a text from a certain elder later that day. It's like, hey, put your message in practice. Took a big, long nap. I was like, all right. So anyway, preachers like it when you actually do the things we tell you to do. And that one was easy, so we'll go with it. But today we're going to talk about parenting. And I'll be honest, I know some of you out there are looking at me with an almost 3-year-old and a negative 3-week-year-old, right? You're looking at me going, what is this guy going to tell me about parenting, right? I should be telling him about parenting. And the thing is, that's awesome. Tell me about parenting. I'm not the be-all, end-all. I would love your input. But I did spend 15 years as a youth minister. I have read lots of books, and we write sermons together as a team, so I've got people that are helping write sermons that are way more knowledgeable than me in the parenting game. And so I hope that there is something that can be gleaned for all of us today. And I know I've told you parts of this story before, but almost 3 years ago, my wife and I were expecting a little girl. And when my wife gets pregnant, her body just decides that it wants to kill everybody. Like her, the child within it. Like, that's what it decides. And so we went to the emergency room 7 times with Evelyn. And it was a copay each time. Do the math in your head there, huh? But 7 times went to the emergency room because her blood pressure was just, it was crazy. It was just spike, 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 spike. And so finally, the day came, and they said, you know what, we're going to induce you, and you really want to have a baby naturally, so we're going to let you do that. And so 3 weeks before her due date, they induce, and so we were like, all right, sweet, this is it. And so she's having no contractions and all this stuff. And so we're like, all right, this is awesome. You know, we're good. And then 24 hours later, they're like, okay, let's see how much progress she's made. And she's like, you've not made any progress at all, this baby thing. And the thing was, like, it was like at that moment that they decided, or her body decided that she was going to preeclampsia, which is basically where your body says, this baby's coming out. So Heather's blood pressure was 212 over 117. And I remember going like, somebody go get that baby right now. Like, I remember I left her room, I went to the front desk where all the nurses and doctors were. I was like, somebody go get that baby, because she's going to die. And they're like, yeah, but we were trying to let her. I was like, get the baby. And they did. Problem was, she had 2 epidurals, and neither of them worked. So that was fun, because they did an emergency C-section on the fact that she had an epidural, but it didn't work. And so she felt everything that was going on in the surgery. It was bad times. And so like we're like, all right, the baby gets here and everything's fine. Heather's fine. Everything I did, I K-cared, which is like I'm holding them skin to skin and doing all that stuff. And we're like, this is good. This is great. So we spent 4 days in the hospital. Heather comes home. Everything's going well. I remember getting home from the hospital, standing in the living room. And I was so excited, but then it just hit me. I remember thinking, now what? You know, people are shaking their heads because they've been there. You know, like, my wife, she's a pediatric nurse. She knows this baby stuff. She's been a NICU nurse for a couple years. I know nothing. I'm an idiot. Like, I can read the Bible to them. Or her, sorry, her. I just remember that. I remember having kind of heart, chest pains and trouble breathing. And I was standing there in the living room like, okay, well, let's do it, you know. So then about 2 years later, we get pregnant again. And this time, I'm an expert now, right? And I'm like, all right, here's the deal. We got pregnant. We're going to schedule a C-section. Everything's going to go awesome. We're going to have this one. Then doctors tell us we lost the baby. No, we didn't. And then 24 weeks into the whole thing, Elijah comes. Wasn't prepared for that at all. Zero. And you know what? There is zero preparation you can make for that. It is awful. It is awful. Having a baby in the NICU for 12 weeks is awful. I'm not going to lie. But he's here. And he's alive. And one day we'll bring him home. He just got past that stupid nasal cannula test, whatever that thing is. The greatest advice I've ever heard in the realm of parenting is, from the moment you bring your child home, start preparing them to leave. How about you? You remember your days like that? When you thought you were ready, but you really had no idea. So today I'm going to talk about parenting, and hopefully, if no one else, I will get something out of this. As we are getting ready to bring home another little bundle of wonderful. However, if you're single, or if you have kids that are grown, if you have grandkids or nieces and nephews, if you have kids of your own or stepkids or your foster care or you adopt, this sermon is for you. This sermon is for anyone that has an influence over a child, and that's every one of you. It takes a church to raise a child, right? We are all in this together. You guys are all part of raising Evelyn, and you will all be part of raising Elijah, except not till April because we can't bring him outside until then. But that's all right. Today I'm going to talk to parents, but let me tell you the definition of the parent of parent that I'm going to use. A parent is an adult who has the responsibility of investing and discipling a child. Another great definition of parenting is when God entrusts us with someone who really belongs to Him. Evelyn is not mine. Elijah is not mine. Your child is not yours. They were entrusted to our care. But really, that child is God's. Turn to Proverbs 22:6. I know most of you know this verse by heart, but I want to look at it again. Train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. I know so many of you heard this verse a million times, and I want you to hear it again. Some of you are thinking that this verse doesn't apply to me, and I want you to hear it. These verses are not just for biological parents. This proverb is for the broader parent that I was speaking of. This is for anyone that has influence on a child. It is an open statement, one that applies to anyone that is helping to raise a child. And that's all of us. It takes a village. It takes a church. Someday, Heather and I will sit down with our kids and say, hey, if there is something you don't want to talk with us about, here is a list of godly people that we want you to go talk to. And some of you will be on that list. Some of you won't. I'm just kidding. We're going to want our kids to know that there are other folks out there that have godly influence in their lives and they can talk to. The Hebrew word for train there is hanok. And it means to train or disciple, so it's a good translation. But the broader, deeper definition is to train in accordance with proper rules of conduct and behavior, which includes behavior or proper rules for religious instruction. So what is that really saying? Teach your kids the Bible. Teach your kids God's Word. Teach them the Scriptures. Teach them the way of Jesus. Teach the way of salvation to your children. 2 Timothy 3:16 through 17, you have been taught, 15 through 17, you have been taught the Holy Scriptures from childhood, and they have given you the wisdom to receive the salvation that comes by trusting in Christ Jesus. All Scripture is inspired by God. Other translations, God breathed. And is useful to teach us what is true and to make us realize what is wrong in our lives. It corrects us when we are wrong and teaches us to do right. God uses it to prepare and equip His people to do every good work. Guys, the gospel is the most important thing that parents can teach and model to children. If you begin this way, then you will have a child that will always have a reason for their hope. A child that will embody 1 Peter 3:15 through 16, which says, instead you must worship Christ as Lord of your life. And if someone asks you about the hope, about your hope as a believer, always be ready to explain it. But do this in a gentle and respectful way. Keep your conscience clear. Then if people speak against you, they will be ashamed when they see a good life, what a good life you live, because you belong to Christ. It's all about building a life. And we have to get this straight. God is the architect. We're the builders. God is the architect. It's His plan. It's His blueprints. We're the builders. Psalm 139, 13 through 16 says, for you, many of you guys know this one by heart too. For you formed my inner parts, you knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works. My soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed substance, and your book were written, every one of them, the days that were formed for me, when as yet there was none of them. We are to build God's children as God has designed them, as God had in mind, by God's set of blueprints. And every child has a different set of blueprints. You can't parent every child in the same way. You can, but it's not going to work well. Most of you guys know that. Every child has a different set, and our job is to read them and build them the way that God wants. And the question is, so how do we figure out how to read the different blueprints? If God is the architect and we are the builders, how do we figure out how to read those plans? The first thing is to train a child to know their love language. Gary Chapman wrote The Five Languages, and then he wrote another book called The Five Languages for Kids. And so And I don't know if you've looked at that at all. We talked a little bit about it earlier, but it's really, really good stuff. You can actually figure out how your kids best receive praise and instruction and different things like that. It's how the best invest in them, your time and your effort and what each kid needs. So the five love languages, Chapman says, children receive love emotionally. But because they are all different, we must pay attention to their individual needs. We must learn to speak our child's love language if we want them to feel loved. We often try to pour all our children into the same mold. We go to parenting conferences and read books, and we are inundated with great ideas that we want to use with our children. And we fail to remember, however, that each child is different. What works with one may not work with another. And what communicates love to one child may not be received the same way by another child. By understanding the five love languages, we can more easily discern the emotional needs of our children. So here's a brief definition of each language. Number one is words of affirmation. Compliments such as "your hair really looks nice today" or "great game tonight" go a long way with this type of child who thrives on praise. Your words can focus on personality, accomplishments, outward appearance, or anything else that affirms. The next one is acts of service. In the early stages of life, we do things for our children that they can't do for themselves. As they get older, our love is expressed by teaching them how to do things for themselves. For a child with this love language, we need to know which acts of service are important to him. Does he feel loved when you help him with homework or teach him to throw a ball? Once you've discovered the acts of service your child appreciates most, perform them often. The next one is gifts. Children with this love language treasure gifts as a tangible token of affection. Unfortunately, they also interpret a lack of gifts as a lack of love. Your gifts don't need to be expensive, and they don't need to be given every day. But recognizing that a child prefers to be rewarded with a pack of gum rather than a hug is an important step in building communication. The next one is quality time. Children who speak this love language seek undivided attention. When they're infants, we play on the floor with them and roll balls back and forth. As they get older, that quality time is found in conversation, bedtime stories, or backyard sports. The activity is not important. The time together is. For a child with siblings, it may be difficult to get one-on-one time with mom or dad. He needs to know that he is worthy of your undivided attention. Evelyn will grab our face like this. Like, look at me in the eyes. We're like, we're listening, but she needs that. And the last one is physical touch. We've long known the emotional power of physical touch. Infants who are held fare better than those who are not. NICU babies, when they're really, really young, when you hold them, they do better than the ones who don't get held. As children get older, they still long for physical affection. Something as simple as a touch on the arm, a pat on the back, or a hug. These gestures are especially important to the child with this love language. He wants to literally feel your love. Chapman recommends that as we focus on our child's primary love language, we remember to use the other four as well. Though children receive love the best from one language, there's no doubt they benefit from all expressions of unconditional love. So that's love language. Second thing is to train a child to understand their temperament. If you look at 22:6 there again, we know in Proverbs 22:6, we know that this is not a promise, right? Like, you know that? It's a proverb. There's a difference between a promise and a proverb, right? A proverb is a wise statement, is a generality. If you do this in such a way, then most likely your outcome is going to be this. Does that make sense? A promise from God, however, is different. So there's a lot of people out there that are like, you know what? I raised them the right way. I raised my child the right way. They were in the church building every time it was open. We said prayers at meals. We did devotions at night. We read the Bible together. And now that he's grown, he's doing all the wrong things and living the wrong way. What about Proverbs 22:6? I did it right. It's a proverb. It's not a promise. It is a good way to live. And the thing is, and you can always say back to those people, is it over? Is their life over yet? Every day they breathe, there's still time. God is constantly wooing his children back to him. You did the right thing by raising them the way you did. But it's not over. And it's not up to you. You train a child. It's a proverb. It's a good way to live your life. We as parents have to understand our children, and we have to understand their temperaments. If you look there on that list, there is an old book, but a great book. It's called Your Child Wonderfully Made by Larry Burkett, who has since passed on. But it is a fantastic book. And basically what Larry Burkett does is he breaks down the DISC test. Have you ever heard of the DISC test? It's like a temperament quiz you take. I don't know if that makes sense. But it basically tells you what kind of personality you have or what kind of temperament you have. And there's D-I-S-C, DISC, right? The D is a dominant, which sounds bad, but it basically means that they like to be in charge. And that's good. And so what you have to do as a parent is help them to give them things where they can be in charge. But they can run rampant where it's like, no, I'm going to control everything. And that's not good. But you want to set them up to be in charge of things. Have a lemonade stand. Be in charge of that. Or, you know, just whatever. Give them little things they can do and be in charge of. And make them be bigger and bigger and bigger as it goes on. And you want to avoid saying things like, stop being so bossy. Which is really hard. Because if your child has this trait, they are bossy all the time. Right? Right? And so, you just want to try to avoid that and encourage the good things of that personality. Okay, that temperament. I is the next one. Is for influencer. The kid that has a lot of influence in somebody. Everyone had that friend that got you to do stuff. In my case, it was always the bad stuff, right? But always that kid that gets you to do stuff. And it's a great trait to have, especially if it's used for good. But the I person needs to be liked. And over and over and over again, they're probably going to ask you, do you like me? Do you think this person likes me? Do you think it just has to be liked? And avoid saying things like, stop talking so much. I don't know, this is me through and through. I talk a lot, I gab, I try to get people to do things. Like that's just who I am. The next one is S, is a steady person. And that type of person needs stability. The person is a rock, and they come through, and they do with, you know, like they're steady. They're an oak tree, right? But they need routine, and they need you to have a stable life. And you'll be tempted to go, can't you just get past this? Like, we're doing something different today. It's like, I need that routine. They need that. So avoid saying things like, hey, just get over it. And understand that they need that routine. They need that sameness to thrive. And the next one is C, is for conscientious. These folks, their temperament, they don't like confrontation at all. They do everything they can to avoid it. Lots of times they'll give in to whatever, like to a dominant person, because they just don't want the confrontation. And these people tend to worry. And we know that the Bible teaches not to worry, but you saying to that your child, don't just stop worrying, doesn't really help anything. Figure out ways to help them figure things out. Okay, third one. I'll move on. Train a child to discover their talents. Everybody remembers the parable of talent, right? About the master, he goes away for a while. You can look it up in Matthew 25, 14 through 30 if you want to look it up later. The master who goes away, he says, I'm going to come back and I'm going to give you all some talents, which in that time is money. And to some he gave a lot, and then to some he gave a medium amount, and to some he gave a little. And he goes off and he comes back and he goes, all right, let me see what you did. Let me see what you do with my talents. And the first guy was like, you know what? I invested it and you gave me this much and now I have like three times as much. And the master was like, good job. And the next guy was like, you know what? You gave me this much and I put it in the bank and it collected interest and I got a return of this much. And he was like, you know what? Good job. You got some return. I appreciate that. And the guy that had little, he said, you know what, master, I know you're a harsh person. And I know that you worked hard for your money. So I went outside, I dug a hole, I buried it, and I covered it up. And now that you're here, I undug it, and here's all your money. And the master says, you did what? I gave you talents to use, to grow, to reach people. I don't hide it under a bushel, no. Right? Use them. God gives every person talents, right? You guys know this. Some that are up here on stage, they sing beautifully, they play beautifully, there are some people that are just super gifted at that. I'm not so much. There's some people that are good at teaching. There's some people good at... But whatever that is, it is your job. You are tasked as a parent, which means all of us, that we have to figure out what those things are in our kids' lives. We have to. And we have to fan those little tiny flames into roaring fires. Because when that happens, you don't know the influence you are going to make in your kid's life, and you don't know the influence that your kid is going to have on the world for Jesus if you do it right and if he does it right. Right? That's our job. Our job is to cheer our kids on, to fan little flames into roaring fires, so that your kid might change the world for Jesus. Yes, even in Bowen, Illinois. Right? There is a reason why Jesus pulled a kid on his knee and said, if you want to enter the kingdom of heaven, you be like this little kid. This little kid who is full of wonder, full of awe. This little kid that is exploring a brand new world and it's all new to him and it's all exciting. Our job, folks, is to teach those little kids what it is to grow up in Jesus. Some of us today need to be that kid. You're dead. You're dead in your transgressions. You're dead in your sin. You don't know what the world holds, and you don't know who Jesus is. I hope today is your day. Today is your day to come forward, or, if you don't want to do that, come find me sometime in the back or later this week or whatever. And let's talk about you and Jesus and your relationship with Him and how your life has to be about Him. And that you need to surrender to Him in baptism. And that you will find a new life. One that is holy and pleasing and blameless because of the power and love of Jesus.